It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome aboard. You know, when it comes to the month of August, the problem is there's too many things to choose from when it comes to investing your time into the outdoors. For example, take fishing. If you're a bass angler, it is a great month to take advantage of the early morning or evening topwater bite at a lake or river near you. Saltwater fishing, it's on for just about everything from tuna to salmon to dorado or mahi-mahi and billfish too. And then there's hunting. Several seasons are on the verge of opening up, and if you haven't sighted in your rifle, shot a few arrows with your bow, or paid a visit to your local skeet and trap club, you know you're behind the proverbial power curve. These are all things we don't get to talk about this week, and I could go on with this list, but let's tell you about what we will be chatting about today on the show. We've got a great lineup of guests to talk about things you'll want to be doing this month. One of those guests is Bob Mallard. He's a very well-known fly angler and writer from Maine who has just published a fabulous new book called Square Tail that is all about brook trout and where to catch them. Not only that, we'll pick Bob's brain about what kind of fly he likes to use to catch these trout during the late summer and his favorite place to do so. Speaking of trout, a great place to catch them during the month of August are in high mountain lakes and ranges like the Sierra Nevadas, the Cascades, and the Rockies. But how do you best get at those fish that aren't close enough to cast to from shore? Well, one way to do it is with a float tube. But float tubes, as we all know, and the waders that go with them, can be awfully unwieldy and heavy. Fortunately, somebody has invented an ultra-lightweight float tube. His name is Phil Hayes. He is the owner of Wilderness Light, and he'll join us to tell you not only about these float tubes, but about some other accessories you'll want to invest in, like those lightweight waders and maybe some lightweight fins. And he'll also share his favorite methods for fishing alpine lakes from a float tube. Another thing happening this month is the rollout of new trucks and boats and great clearance sales for last year's models. With that in mind, we'll talk to Beverly Ramsey with Low Boats out of Lebanon, Missouri, home of our new affiliate KBNN AM 750, and let you know what great deals they have on some of their fishing boats and what's new when it comes to their product line of fishing boats, combo fishing and hunting boats, and pontoon boats for 2020. Now, as you might imagine, I get a lot of stuff in the mail and via email, and one thing I really look forward to is the Outdoor Wire published by Purina Pro Plan, because I'm a bird dog owner and they've always got some great tips to share. And this month they've got a great one: 5 training tune-ups for the season ahead. I read this, I thought to myself, I've got to talk to somebody. So I got a hold of the folks at Purina, and guess who we have for you? One of the most famous people when it comes to bird dog hunting, at least in terms of training these dogs, Tom Dokken. He's got decades of experience as a dog trainer. He's the inventor of the Dokken's Dead Fowl Trainer, of which you probably have some of those if you're a bird dog owner. And he's the owner of Dokken's Dog Supply and Oak Ridge Kennels. Tom, it is a true privilege to have you on the air today.
Oh, it's great to be on. I appreciate it.
I'd love to talk to you like for the rest of the show, but tragically, I only get you for 5 minutes. I want to go through some of these training tune-ups for the season ahead. Number one, toe the line, and it really gets back to obedience, doesn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, this time of year here in the Midwest, our hunting season is really close to coming on. And obedience is probably one of the biggest reasons people have frustrations out in the field. If it's duck hunting, it's normally the dog isn't staying steady in the duck blind. If it's upland hunting, the dog is going to be out of control and not hunting at a reasonable distance. So, you know, those two things, I mean, if you're talking upland dog or a waterfowl dog, really should spend some time working on it. And you don't have to be out in the field to do it. You know, basic obedience and control, that's done at home. Because if you don't have good control at home, it's going to transfer out into the field as well. So you can get on it now. But to be honest with you, it should be just a yearly routine to get your dog listening and keep him there as well.
I agree. But the next one, on your best behavior, well, this speaks to a failing a lot of us have, accepting half measures, like not retrieving to hand, for example. And you really recommend, and the folks at Purina really recommend, ask for excellence all the time and don't put up with half measures.
Right. I always tell people when I'm doing a seminar, your dog is watching you and they're watching your every move. And what happens is you'll get in a habit of asking the dog to do the command. You'll ask him again and you're going to find yourself giving the command four or five times before you finally do something about it. Well, the dog knows they've got to pass until you finally get serious about doing it. So here's the rule. Give the command once. If you're going to give it again, there's going to be a correction. And the correction is going to be all relevant to your dog and what correction you've already worked with. So it's more of a habit of getting yourself into than getting the dog in the habit. You have to give a command one time, follow through if you have to say it again. It's pretty simple, but you got to catch yourself getting into that bad habit because they're just a creature of what we're going to be doing ourselves.
Number three, tip. Top shape, and this goes not just for the bird dogs, but for the hunters as well. Now's the time for us to get into shape, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, you know, your dog, and unfortunately, if people wait too long, they feel that they're going to get their dog in shape during the hunting season. Well, you know, if you're going to hunt 70 to 80 days out of the season, maybe you can do that, but most dogs aren't going to be hunting that much. And you want your dog ready to fire out there first thing. So right now, this time of year, it's probably the hottest time of year. You want to be doing your upland exercising early morning when it's cool, and then we'll go to the water in the afternoon. If you have a dog that swims, you can take advantage of that too. But you got to get out and got to get them active. If you're just taking your dog for a walk down the street, that's not a real exercise for them. It's almost a crawl. So you've got to get them out where you can cut them loose and give them some time to actually be running if it's on land. And swimming's a great, great cardio. So don't overlook those two areas for sure.
Another one that really caught my attention, basically scenario-based training, getting situation-specific and doing it right in your own yard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people think dog training is about being out in 500 acres, but to be honest with you, we call it yard training. All of the basic fundamentals are learned in the yard, and that goes from your basic obedience, or how about introducing a young dog to decoys? You can put decoys out on the lawn, have your dog walking through them, start throwing some dummies amongst them so he understands that he should be picking up something other than the dummies. How about getting your dog, if you field hunt, used to a layout blind? Well, you can do that in the backyard. All of these things are prepped in a real close proximity. So yard training is important. And then you can start taking everything and bring it into the field. But the time to be showing your dogs these things is not going to be the day you go hunting. It's normally going to be a disaster. So show them ahead of time so they have some reference to go back to for sure.
For what it's worth, Tom, I have lived that disaster with several dogs. The last one we ought to mention here, burning desire. And this is really getting your dog amped up for hunting. And one suggestion is taking that dog to a hunting preserve and getting them some exposure before the real thing, almost like preseason football.
Right. I mean, and there's nothing like birds to get your dog into the game. And you can do all of the, throw all of the dummies in the backyard that you want to do, but you really need to get your dog involved with birds. In a game farm, especially, you know that your dog is going to have bird contact. And I suggest this a lot, you know, for and not only young dogs, but older dogs to get them in the groove. And especially if, let's say you have a young dog and you're going upland hunting, something like that, and you're not really getting into birds, you're going to find that that young dog is going to start, you know, really losing interest. And you better get yourself to a game farm so you can actually manufacture, you know, some of those things. A couple other things you want to think about, though, too, and this maybe goes back a little bit to, you know, some conditioning, is you want to get your dog used to drinking out of a water bottle. I'll put a little peanut butter on the end of a water bottle. Let the dog start licking that to get him used to it. Because when you're in the field, your job is to keep your dog hydrated. I also, if I have a dog that isn't really actively aggressive as far as wanting to drink a lot of water, they're distracted, I'll put some Forta Flora in the water. It really makes the water taste good. It's a Purina product. It's a probiotic. And it also helps them get through the day a little bit better. And then one other thing, don't start feeding a good dog food a month before you start hunting. I mean, you want to feed a good dog food year round because you really, you want to have your dog in top physical shape. And, you know, if he's sitting on the couch eating Twinkies all day long, so to speak, you know, you're going to have trouble. So feed a good high quality food. You know, I'm a Purina guy, so that's going to be my suggestion there as well.
Well, Purina Pro Plan is found in quality pet stores and grocery stores, too, around the nation. And that, with the high protein content, is a great food to feed your hunting dog. And what's a website people can go to for Dawkins Dog Supply?
You can go to Dawkins.com or DeadfowlTrainer.com and see all of our products.
Tom, that was great advice you gave us. It's going to get us ready for the season ahead. Thanks so much for sharing it with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
My pleasure. Let's do it again.
More habitat equals more wildlife. Pheasants Forever is working hard every day to ensure there's more wildlife habitat for the future. Join the habitat leader and help create wildlife habitat in your community. To join us, go to pheasantsforever.org.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge. You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We're talking a lot about trout this summer, and we've got just the person to talk more about it. His name is Bob Mallard. He's an outdoors writer, a former fly shop owner, a fly designer, native fish advocate, and author who hails from the great state of Maine, and he's got a brand new book called Square Tail, The Definitive Guide to Brook Trout and Where to Find Them. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Bob, I got a review copy of Square Tail, and I've got to tell you, it is a beautiful hardcover book. I could describe what's inside, but I'd rather you as the author do so. Tell our listeners what they're going to find in the pages.
Well, thanks for the compliment to start, but this was years in the making. I'm a brook trout advocate. I'm a lifetime New Englander. I'm a 40-year fly guy, and so this is something I've always wanted to do. I was waiting for the right format, the right publisher, etc., but I cover everything, and I basically went back to square one, looked at where brook trout are, what's been written, what hasn't. And I went kind of soup to nuts. I like to describe it as a conservation book sandwiched around a where-to book. So there's some science, some history, lore, pop culture. There's a bunch of where-to divided into several categories. And there's a solid 30-page status threats and conservation section in the end, along with a listing of all the resources, the folks who are in the brook trout conservation and management game.
I want to talk a little bit about brook trout. I mean, I love brookies. I still have a memory of, I think I was 6 years old, and I was on the Poudre River in Colorado, and my uncle and my granddad and my dad, they were fly fishing upstream, and my grandma had me with a little cane pole with a fly attached, and we were over a overcut bank, and I remember hooking and catching my first brook trout. It was a nice one. It was like a 12, 13-inch brook trout. I thought it was the most beautiful fish I'd ever seen in the world. And I think a lot of us, as anglers, when it comes to trout fishing, have gotten our start with brook trout, haven't we?
Yeah, you know, it would be fair to say that brook trout were the first game fish in America. Of course, that's because America was settled in the Northeast. But, you know, for years, decades, generation, it was all about brook trout. And then, you know, rainbows got popular, browns got popular, etc. But, you know, it's easy to forget just how beautiful brook trout actually are. And as they say, they live in beautiful places.
They do indeed. But they've been introduced into places that are far beyond their historical range, especially out west. And I know that at first that was a great thing, but a lot of fisheries biologists and managers, well, they kind of hold their noses up when they look at brook trout. Why is that?
Well, for starters, they did it, so they should be careful about holding their noses. And but the issue is that, from my view, non-native fish is a non-native fish is a non-native fish. It doesn't belong there. It does more harm than good, and it's changed the aquatic landscape and fly fishing as we know it significantly. With that said, that's typically not why game managers don't like them. Fisheries managers don't like them because they don't necessarily grow big. They tend to overpopulate in western waters. They've evolved to survive in what would be marginal conditions for most trout. The northeast waters, these freestone waters, they're up and down, drought, flood, they're relatively sterile, they're often small. So you take this fish that's evolved to live in some pretty rough conditions, and you throw them in these fertile western streams, and you have overpopulation stunting, and it doesn't deliver what they want to deliver, which is big fish, with some exceptions. So that's, you know, where that problem started and why they don't like.
Very interesting. And I have certainly hiked to many a lake with a fishing rod in hand, only to find it full of stunted 4 to 6 inch brook trout. So the struggle is real when it comes to these fish. Fortunately, there are plenty of places in North America. We need to include Canada as part of this equation, too, where you can still get some really nice brook trout. And speaking of big brook trout, what's your favorite place to go? And this may be unfair because it's like asking a parent which of their children is the favorite, but I'm going to try to tie you down here. Do you have one place in particular you really love to fish for big brookies?
Sure. For me, you know, accessibility's got a lot to do with it, but the Rapid River in Maine is unmatched in North America, or not North America, but in the United States. Obviously, Labrador provides the largest native brook trout, and some of the biggest in the world are coming out of Argentina these days. But for me, I'll take, you know, Rangeley, Maine, the Rapid River, the McGalloway River, the Kennebago River. There's a lot of history, and we're still seeing, you know, brook trout up to 20 inches, wild native brook trout.
Wow. Never caught one over 13 inches. I would love to catch a wild brook trout of that size. When it comes to fishing for them, you're a fly angler. Is there, and I hate to do this to you again, but I love to do this to people, what's your one favorite fly, your go-to fly, when it comes to fishing these streams for brookies? We'll stick with the summer because I know it changes with the season. So let's talk August-September timeframe.
For me, small streams, which are obviously totally different than rivers and lakes and ponds, but most anglers find their brook trout in small streams. And for me, there's nothing like, you know, a red attractor dry. Could be a humpy, could be, you know, some locally tied pattern, could be a foam beetle. But because these fish are eking out a living in what is typically relatively sterile environments, a big part of it is they're looking for everything that floats by, and something that they can see typically gets some attention. And with that said, the one thing you'll see with these really bright flies is they get attention, but not always an eat. So they're a great way to find out what's there, but, you know, oftentimes you end up having to go to a natural to actually get them to eat. So that's it.
Very interesting. And I've heard of a lot of theories about the color red. I know most fly anglers, they're dying to match the hatch, but if you talk to, like, bass anglers, they will talk to you ad nauseum about red hooks and how just a red hook versus a plain hook can change everything. Same with, you know, spinners. Sometimes a red spinner works like nothing else. So it's really interesting to me that you chose the color red there. Is it for the same reason, the whole attractant?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 60 years old. I've been fishing since I was 10. I've been fly fishing since I was in my late teens. But I go back to the days when a daredevil, a red and white daredevil, was probably the most popular spoon around. And a Meps, I think it was called a Red Fury.
The Black Fury. The Black Fury. I've still got a bunch, and they still work.
I had those too. But I think it's called the red and white one. So there's a couple theories. It could imitate blood. It could imitate gill play or gill rakers, can imitate certain fish have red eyes, smallmouth, etc. Or it could simply be that it's a color they see well. But clearly, I used to jokingly say that no fly doesn't benefit by a little bit of red. My first fish on a fly took what was called a gray hackle, just a peacock body, a grizzly hackle, and a red tag.
I would love to talk more about this, but unfortunately, we are out of time. So the last question is this. When and where can folks get their hands on the book Square Tail, The Definitive Guide to Brook Trout and Where to Find Them?
Books everywhere right now. For me and all authors, buying direct is by far the best thing. BobMallard.com. I have an online store up in the banner, and I'm selling signed first edition U.S. printed copies.
All right. BobMallard.com. That is the place to go for your copy of Square Tail. It is a beautiful book. And if you want to learn everything you can about brook trout and where to find them, this is the book for you. Bob, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me and look forward to getting on again.
So you sit down and do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. It is the height of summer, and this is a great time of year to hike to Alpine Lakes. I don't care whether you were talking the Rockies or the Sierra Nevadas or the Cascades, the trout in some of these lakes, they are a calling. However, getting to those fish sometimes can be tough to do. A lot of alpine lakes, like Pete Lake that I just hiked to in the Central Cascades, very shallow around the edges, and all those trout are in deeper water. So what do? You need something to get out there. And there's a person who has just the thing. His name is Phil Hayes. He is the founder of Wilderness Light, and he makes ultralight float tubes. Phil, great to have you back on the air.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be here with you and with your listeners. I'm just excited, enthusiastic. It is the peak of summer, and it's the time of the year when everyone really has a blast getting to those alpine lakes and getting out on the water for just a fabulous experience and terrific fishing.
Well, I really enjoyed having you on the air when we were in Boise at the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous. When you introduced me to your Backpacker Pro, a 3-pound, 6-ounce float tube system, which was just amazing to me because I've had a float tube before, and it weighed a lot more than that, and it was really bulky, and it was a pain in the butt, and I couldn't imagine hiking it in 3, 4, 5 miles to an alpine lake. But with yours, fits into a little stuff sack, it's got the air compressor with it, and you just pump it up when you get there, and you're ready to go. Better still, I understand you've got a new float tube that's even lighter than this. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, we do, John. And I guess I would preface my comments that I've been hiking into backcountry lakes. This will be my 23rd year. And for the first 5 years, I waited along the shoreline to either spin or fly cast. And, you know, you see a lot of rising fish, a lot of action that you just cannot reach. And so we learned about a company that made, at that time, ultralight flow tubes. And we started packing those in. Unfortunately, they went out of business. So in 2010, got the bug that, gosh, I've got to do this myself. 2013, we made the Backpacker Pro available. And as you just mentioned, customers have really enjoyed that the last 6 years. But some had requested, gosh, can do something even lighter. And so we introduced this year the Treeline 2.X. It's designed to go above the tree line for those going after golden trout, you know, really going long distances, because it's actually a half pound lighter than the Backpacker Pro. The Treeline 2.X weighs 2 pounds, 14 ounces. It is really just as robust and durable and rugged as the Backpacker Pro. The way we've been able to save weight, we had customers and said, boy, you know, the Backpacker Pro is terrific. You've got 3 storage pockets. You've got a ton of D-rings and attachment points for net, stringer, other gear. But I don't think I need all that. I'd rather have fewer bells and whistles and have less weight to carry because I'm going that extra long distance. And so that's what we've done in the tree line. We have 1 pocket rather than the 3 pockets. We have fewer D-rings. We've got fewer attachment points. It's basically everything you need, but not 1/10 of an ounce more for that long distance hiker to get onto backcountry lakes above the tree line.
Wow. A float tube that weighs in at 2 pounds, 14 ounces. You know, I've packed in lunches that weigh more than this, Phil. So this is just amazing to me. I do want to talk a little bit, though, about getting there and setting up for a backcountry excursion in any of our mountain ranges when it comes to your float tubes. Obviously, yeah. You have the float tube, and it comes with a pump, so you can go ahead and pump it up lakeside. And you have some really lightweight fins that are unfortunately out of stock at this very moment, right. But they'll be back in stock. So we've got that. When it comes to waders, these lakes can be really cold. Are there particular waders you recommend, or do you just man up and get out there in your swim trunks?
No, I really recommend waders. It just makes the experience that much more comfortable. And, of course, it's important as part of your ultralight gear to do your homework and search around for lightweight, ultralight waders. And, unfortunately, because it's kind of a niche item, there are not a lot of manufacturers that make them. But it is relatively easy. And I would point to your listeners, John, there are a lot of waders that are right around the 32-ounce mark that are available at a really reasonable price, right around $100, a little over $100. And so a lot of the people who go with me, that's usually their first investment to get started.
Are there any particular brands you recommend?
Yeah, so Caddis and Reddington both make waders that are right in that 2-pound, $100 range. And I would point people to our website. We have a specific page on the accessories tab that has a full list of ultralight gear, our current recommendations. And these are things that we have carried in and tested ourselves over a period of time. And so we've got good confidence that they're going to work for your listeners to carry in, John. So I would highlight that because waders are so important. We have a specific page dedicated exclusively to ultralight waders. And some of the things I would point out, one is a Patagonia wader. They just introduced about a year ago a wader that weighs in at under 2 pounds.
Wow.
It's a bit pricey. It'll be in the 28, 29 ounce range, but that's a really good wader that's available. But again, it's a little bit more substantial investment than the $100 mark.
Sure. And the website, folks, if you want to check some of this out, is Wilderness Lite, light spelled L-I-T-E, floattubes.com. That's wildernesslightfloattubes.com. Let's switch gears and talk about fishing methods when it comes to float tubes. I know you're a fly angler, but here's my question. Do you look for the rising fish and basically, you know, fin your way out to them and start casting? Or do you troll like a streamer or a nymph or, you know, something else, maybe with spin gear as you're going around a lake?
Yeah, both. And I tell you, and I think many of your listeners will feel the same way, the fun of dry fly fishing, to have that fish come up and just strike. I mean, your heart rate goes from 70 to 170.
Yes, it does.
In an instant. When you experience that. And so if there are rising fish, and on many of these high mountain lakes, by late morning, early afternoon, there's a little breeze blowing in, In the summertime, by this time of the year, they're terrestrials that are active. So ants, hoppers, whatever it might be, are blown onto the water. Great targets for trout. And so it's a blast to cast dry flies.
And you just gave a couple of imitation recommendations as well. I know my favorite when it comes to Alpine Lakes fishing, don't ask me why. I think it just torques off the cutthroat trout, the old Royal Wolf.
Yes. Yep.
Spin casting, though, really quick, we got about a minute left.
Yeah, so for spin casting, there are plastic bubbles that are made that will hold a little bit of water. They screw open. You can put a little water in there to get a little bit of weight. You leave about 3-4 feet of monofilament, whether it's fly tippet or just your regular monofilament. Out the end of that, it gives you sufficient weight to cast a fly, and you can either cast that to rising fish or you control it, and it works great, John. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there you go, folks. There's a quick primer on ultra-light float tube fishing in a mountain lake near you. If you want to find out more, go to the website Wilderness Light. That's L-I-T-E, floattubes.com. WildernessLightFloatTubes.com. Get into some better fishing at these Alpine Lakes this summer, and do it quick because we don't have much of summer left. Phil, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Wonderful to be part of it, and encourage your audience, if they have any questions, email us, wildernesslight@gmail.com. We just love to help people get well equipped to hit those Alpine Lakes.
Outstanding.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands. We've helped ban the use of drones for hunting. We help repair wildlife corridors and key riparian areas. We speak up against illegal ATV use. We collaborate with elected leaders to keep public lands in public hands. We're Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, with membership in all 50 states in Canada. Please join this dynamic conservation group. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
There's a place where the fishing is year-round, where the sun shines 300 days a year. The wineries and breweries are right downtown. The hiking and cycling offer spectacular views you just don't get in the big cities. Fortunately, the place is real and vibrant. It's the Dalles, Oregon, just 90 short minutes from Portland, along the gorgeous Columbia River, where the adventures are limited only by your imagination. Find out more at explorethedalles.com.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might just get away. AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Go fishing. Help salmon and make money. You can do it from May 1st through September 30th by catching northern pike minnow and turning them in for cash. Here's how it works. First, register at a designated station on the Columbia or Snake River. Then, go fishing. At the end of the day, turn in any pike minnow you catch 9 inches or longer and look for the ones with tags worth $500. You'll get vouchers for those pike minnow you turn in, and you mail those in for cash. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting, as in Smokey Bear. We were about to head home after a bonfire, and Smokey said the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
No kidding.
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
Kidding. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio, and I am happy to announce we've got some new listeners on board this weekend. They're tuning in to KJPW Talk 1390 out of Waynesville, Missouri, and KBNN Talk AM 750 out of Lebanon, Missouri, which is the location of Beverly Ramsey and Low Boats, our next interview. Beverly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. And again, it's just funny that we just happened to pick up these stations the week you're going to be on. The reason I've got you on is because I've got a little secret here. I've been a low boat owner, got a 12-foot low that I've fished in countless ponds and lakes for 20 years now. And I've always been kind of in love with your line of boats. And here's why. You have aluminum boats. They're made in the USA, made in Missouri. But your price point is very attractive to most of us, and the quality is still very high.
That is our focus. We try to provide consumers with a value product at an attractive price point and with a quality boat.
Well, when it comes to making boats for fishing and boats that can be used for fishing and hunting, like your Roughneck series, you do a great job. And it just so happens that right now, you've got a year-end clearance sale on your Scorpion series of boats. Why don't you tell our listeners about those boats and who they're meant for?
Well, those boats are a great entry-level boat for someone new to fishing, potentially. They are a multi-species boat, so you can fish for crappie, bass, you know, whatever you might find in the lakes around here. They're a very unique product in that they have all these features and options available in a 16 or 17 foot model. And we currently have an extra clearance discount on 2019 and 2018 models of our Scorpion 16.
Let's move ahead to 2020. Now, you've got a whole bunch of lines of boats in terms of these multi-species or bass boats like the Scorpion and the Striker and the Stinger. You've got a higher-end boat called the Favorite. You've got, like I said, the Roughneck series, which is great for the dual hunter and fisherman. You've even got a Catfish boat series, too. When it comes to 2020, what's new? What's exciting from Low Boats?
Well, the exciting models we're introducing, one is, you mentioned the Favorite. The Favorite 198 is a collaboration with Favorite Rods and Reels, and that is a fully featured boat with a 150 on it, 19-foot model. It has fish finders, a Helix 10 on the console, a Helix 8 up front, and then Ultrex trolling motor. It is decked out with a C-deck throughout, big live wells, and that boat is priced at $42,499. With a 150, and it's ready to fish, ready tournament fishing. So it's a great new model for 2020.
And, you know, as you're describing that, I was thinking exact thing. This thing is tournament ready. Whether you're fishing the Bass Club or whether you want to break into the big leagues, this sounds like a fantastic boat. What else do you have coming up for next year?
So we have, you mentioned Roughnecks. We have a Roughneck 1860. This is our 25th anniversary edition. So it's got a really attractive price point. It has great features, a throwback logo. Roughneck is one of our toughest boats, and this model is really, it's built for fishermen and hunters.
Okay. And anything else, not necessarily on the fishing side, but maybe on the boating side that's coming up new for Low?
Right. We have two new pontoon models, and we're excited about both of them. One is an SS210 conversion lounge, so it's a 21-foot model that has a conversion lounge in the aft. And the other one, we're excited about it, an SS250 windshield boat. So this, a 25-foot pontoon, a high-performance pontoon boat. It has a windshield, dual consoles, a walk-through windshield. It's a great layout for families who can get out on the water.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. Now, you've got a lot of dealers all over the country. And folks, if you want to find them, the website to go to is lowe boats.com. Just go to the Find a Dealer tab and you'll find several in your area, but you just recognize one dealer in particular as being the largest low dealer of them all. Tell us which dealer this is and where it's located.
Yeah, we awarded Angler's Port out of Warsaw, Missouri with our World's Largest Dealer Award at our dealer meeting a couple weeks ago. Very proud of their partnership. They've really grown in that area. They're up in Warsaw near Truman Lake, and they're just a great low dealer.
All right. Well, we are going to have to let you go. But folks, if you are looking for an affordable but high quality aluminum boat, look no further than Low Boats. You can start checking them out at lowboats.com. That's L-O-W-E boats.com, or head down to your local dealer and do so. Whether you want to take advantage of a year-end clearance sale for the Scorpion series, whether you're looking for something new for 2020, or whether you just want a pontoon boat for some family fun out of the water, Low Boats has got it for you. Beverly, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you.
It's time for the Trail of Shame.
Shame, shame on you. Shame, shame on you.
Stories of poachers, scoundrels, and other ne'er-do-wells. So if you see someone committing a criminal act on the water or in the field, turn them in. It's the right thing to do.
An awful Facebook post by a fishing guide not only got him a ticket from a Fish and Wildlife Agency, but it cost him his dream job. The person in question is Michael Garcia. He was a 36-year-old fly fishing guide from New Mexico. According to Colorado Parks and Wildlife, Garcia was out with his dog near the Conejos River in southern Colorado recently when his dog chased down a fawn and killed it. For reasons unknown, Garcia decided it would be a good idea to post photographs of the dog and the dead fawn to social media. Horrified viewers contacted Colorado Parks and Wildlife, who opened an investigation and cited Garcia for multiple violations with a total fine of some $1,400 and the potential loss of his fishing license for anywhere from 1 to 5 years. According to Fox 10 News in Phoenix, Arizona, Garcia posted an apology for the incident on his Facebook page, but things have gone from bad to worse for Garcia, and he may have some problems paying his fine. That's what I found out when I called Conejos River Anglers, where Garcia worked as a guide when this happened. I spoke with Pat Blankenship, the owner of the guide service, who said Garcia was definitely not on the clock or working for him when the incident occurred, and when he found out what happened, he fired him. Blankenship was very blunt in saying that Conejos River Anglers does not condone his actions in any way. So, Michael Garcia, congratulations. Your bad decision-making has netted you not a trout, but a big fine, along with the loss of a dream job as a trout fishing guide, and has now landed you firmly on the trail of shame.
Shame on you.
We've got to start wrapping things up here, but before we go, I want to ask you to do a couple of things. Number one, check out our Facebook page, like and follow it if you haven't done so already. You'll find it at America Outdoors Radio, and we actually post quite a few things there that don't make the show, as well as podcasts of our show a few days after it airs. Another place that you can find podcasts of our show and get previews of what's coming up in the week ahead is our website. You'll find that at America Outdoors Radio. You'll also find sponsor links there. I hope that you will click on those. Check out our sponsors like Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Alaska, which is truly Alaska's best lodge, the Dalles Area Chamber of Commerce and the Columbia River Gorge of Oregon, your base camp for outdoors adventure, Shiloh Inns and Suites, and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Oh, and we actually have a sponsor opening if you want to get involved with us too. We can share your message to a platform of thousands, I mean thousands of outdoors enthusiasts who listen to this show every week. And speaking of this show, a big shout out to Talk Media Network. They have really helped us grow this year, and we have just hit a major milestone. We are now airing every week on 75 stations in 52 markets around this wonderful country that we live in. That's right. You can hear us from Alaska to Southern California, from Washington and Oregon, all the way to New York State, and lots of points in between to include KJPW Talk 1390 in Waynesville, Missouri, and KBNN Talk AM 750 in Lebanon, Missouri. Both very close, by the way, to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And thank you to all of you who are serving there. We appreciate it. To all of you at Talk Media Network, thank you for continuing to help us to grow as a show. And to all of you who listen every week, thank you for coming on board. I love the feedback we get from you. And please feel free to reach out through Facebook or through our website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com if you have things that you want to share with us or if you have show topics you think we ought to cover. And now, let's get back to summer and all of those options we have during the month of August, whether you're going to be on the water or in the field or out at the range. Here's hoping you are blessed in the days ahead. Here's hoping that the rest of summer is kind to you. And do remember this, it is your country and your outdoors, so get out there and enjoy it.